We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Adam. It's Friday.
Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying. Fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
We got... Someone tweeted us the gif of Rebecca Black dancing in the car.
Yeah, oh yeah.
This week.
When her friend is on her right.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that. It had been a while since I had seen the video, and it reminded me of just how happy it is to be Friday again.
Oh yeah. We've got a happy Friday here on the show. We've got a lot to do. Carolina football schedule is out. We're going to talk about the schedule. And then we're going to bring in Rick Steinbacher, of course, recurring guest here on the show. We're going to talk to Rick, associate AD at Carolina, former All-ACC linebacker. And Rick puts the schedule together. And so we're going to talk to Rick about the schedule, just kind of the challenges of building a schedule, and just some general football stuff as well with Steiny. We will also look back to the game against Notre Dame. Feels like a long time ago on Tuesday night for the Tar Heels here in at the Smith Center, a nice bounce back win simply in the fact that the Tar Heels won, which they needed to do. And we'll take a quick peek at Miami as well and some other stuff to talk about. Adam, I thought we'd start with the football schedule, though. And my initial thought when I saw the schedule was, ooh, that's a good schedule. And then my second thought was, man, this schedule is really hard. It is an attractive schedule, I think, as a fan, because there's a lot of good games that are either at home or the South Carolina game in Charlotte, easy to get to, depending on obviously where you're from. But a good quality schedule, but a very difficult schedule, I think, for where this team is. Although, who knows? They may be 1,000,000% improved. You don't know. But I just think a really challenging, good schedule, but one that will be a lot of fun to watch Carolina try to navigate through.
Definitely a tough start. Like, I think we're used to when you have this marquee opening game, which Carolina obviously does against South Carolina and Charlotte, then you kind of take a breather that second week. Well, this year, the second week is even more important than the first week, because you've got coastal opponent Miami in your home opener, Miami with a new coach who Mack Brown knows very well, and like we think they're pretty talented, but who in the world knows what they're going to look like under Manny Diaz? That's in a very important game that you have just 7 days after playing South Carolina. That's a tough start. And then, oh, by the way, later that month, Clemson's going to come to town. I mean, that, whew, you could be feeling great at the end of September. You could say, well, I'm glad that month is over.
And then you have all the different kind of navigational things you have to do as you move through the ACC. But as we talked about a couple weeks ago, you don't know right now. The Coastal Division is just so different right now than it was 2 months ago with new coaches at Miami and, of course, here at Carolina and at Georgia Tech, and you just don't know. And so it is going to be a fun year, I think, just because there really is every single week, I think there's an intriguing storyline, and there's a lot of good home games for Carolina.
And there's some momentum now behind football, and you've got a chance to build some really good momentum at the start of that schedule. I mean, you could really have people excited, and Rick will talk about this some, and have Keenan Stadium really be a fun place to be if you can just produce a little in those first couple weeks. And as we have talked about on here before, Carolina football fans are not accustomed to being excited after that first week or so. If you can just give them a little oxygen, a little something to believe in, then I think they want to. They want to be excited.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think about, like, the Louisville crowd at the Louisville basketball game a couple games ago, but the most crowd like this ever was the senior night when Seth Curry came in for Duke and had a huge game and Duke beat Carolina. That crowd was so ready to just be ignited, and to Duke's credit, they didn't let it happen. They played better than the Tar Heels did that night, and I kind of feel that way about Carolina football. Like, if you just give that one little spark, it's going to be a wildfire of excitement, but it's just you got to have the spark, or if you let it be dormant too long, then you run the risk of running out of energy.
I like the Wake Forest game as a non-conference game.
Yeah, and there's been some confusion about that, and there will be confusion about that, I think, until the game is played, and probably even after the game is played, when people go, wait, why didn't that affect the record? And we'll talk to Rick about it, but just a reminder that Carolina Wake signed this deal a couple years ago that they wanted to play each other more often. And Rick, again, will tell us kind of how all that came about. But wanted to play each other more often than they do now in the new ACC world, where you don't play teams in the other division that much. And so they signed a home-and-home as a non-conference game, and that starts this year. And so, yes, Carolina's playing Wake in Chapel Hill. This one's in Chapel Hill. Or is it in Winston?
This one's in Winston.
This one's in Winston. Then they are coming to Chapel Hill. But it does not count as a conference game. And so, yeah, keep that in mind. And that's on a short turnaround. That's a Thursday night game on just a 5-day turnaround, so that'll be tough.
How does this schedule fit with your non-conference scheduling philosophy, which you have built as the head coach at many prominent programs?
Two things. As I am on record as saying, I think you should play somebody you can beat in the first week most times. I don't mind playing the neutral site game against South Carolina every now and then. I think I like that better than the home and home with Cal to start the year, for example. So I'm fine playing one of those, although I do wish, for the Tar Heels' sake, that Mercer game was the second week in this particular, after that. So, like, Duke, for example, is playing Alabama the first week, and Alabama's probably going to win that game. But then Duke's next game is against North Carolina A&T, a game that the Blue Devils have a 99% chance of winning. And so I do wish for the Tar Heels that Mercer game was in week two, because I do, just like we were talking about, Carolina could play well in those first 2 weeks and still be 0-2. And I think at some point, playing well is great, but at some point you need the results too, especially just to keep that momentum moving. And so, you know, Rick talks about kind of the philosophy of scheduling some and how Carolina got to this point. And he also said, and I don't want to give away too much of the Rick interview, but also said that, you know, they haven't had that same discussion with Mack Brown yet, that this schedule was put together using the philosophy that Bubba Cunningham and Rick and Larry Fedora kind of had as the people making those decisions. And they haven't had that same philosophy discussion with Coach Brown, because they haven't had time to yet, and it wouldn't have made a difference for this year's schedule anyway. And so I'll be interested to see if things do change a little bit in the future, where you move that game, and by that game I mean the Mercer type of game, to earlier in the year. Because I just, that feels like a slam dunk to me, who's never made a schedule in his life.
I think you should only play the super duper marquee opener if you're about 99% sure you're at least a top 20 team.
Right. And we've said before, like the Carolina-Georgia game a couple years ago, 100% made sense to do it.
Or Carolina-LSU that year with a full roster. That being said, no offense to South Carolina, I don't put this in the category of super-duper marquee opener because South Carolina is going to be good, but I don't know that they're going to go to the Sugar Bowl, for example. Right. And maybe they will, and maybe they won't. But I think it's okay to play.
Maybe they won't have the Sugar Bowl. We don't know.
Maybe the SEC won't send a team. It's just hard to say. We're a little too far out. But I think it's okay to play like a South Carolina if you feel like you're going to be competitive. And I do think.
I certainly think the Tar. I mean, we've had these very similar discussions.
Right.
Carolina was better than 2-9, in my opinion. A better team than that. I think they will have a better record than that next year. So, yes, I agree with what you're saying.
The trick with all that is you have to know the answer to that question like 3 years in advance.
Well, I tell you what, let's do this. Let's get to the conversation with Rick, and then I want to talk a little bit more about kind of what we talked about with him. But I don't want to keep giving away what we talked about. So let's listen to that conversation with Rick. This is about the football schedule, the current schedule that just came out, kind of scheduling philosophy, what it takes to build a schedule, and then some other football stuff in addition to that. So let's get to that, and then we'll come back and we'll continue this discussion. But here's our conversation with our good friend Rick Steinbacher. Excited to have back with us a recurring guest here on the Carolina Insider. Oh, hold on, Adam. I had your microphone turned down.
I can't hear it.
Now you're allowed to talk.
That's usually what happens.
A recurring guest, Rick Steinbacher, joining us. Rick, Adam and I were talking about it. You might be tied for first for like the most appearances on the podcast.
I miss your office, Jones.
Yeah, you don't like Mobile Pod World Headquarters as much.
Are we allowed to tell people we're sitting in the officials' locker room in the basement of the Smith Center?
Oh, okay.
No!
Get the security. Get them out of here. So Steiny, schedule came out a couple days ago for Carolina football. You play a large role in compiling this schedule. As Adam and I have already talked about, this is a very difficult schedule for the Tar Heels. Kind of tell us a little bit of how it came together and what excites you about the 2019 campaign.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult schedule. We'll get to that in a minute. But I'm excited about it because, you know, in 2017, we had 7 home games and Notre Dame. And I felt like that was an awesome schedule. This one's pretty darn close.
Yeah.
In fact, it may be just as good when you look at the variety of things from opening up in Charlotte against South Carolina, having the defending national champs here at home, even 2 Thursday night road games. I think that's pretty cool. Normally, you probably wouldn't want that, but it's a unique year where there's the extra week between Labor Day and Thanksgiving, so you get 2 byes. So I think because of that, it's a little bit easier to absorb more non-traditional game days like 2 Thursday nights. One of them is going to be on a short week, and that stinks. But the other one we'll have plenty of time to prepare for. But I'm fired up.
One of the twists in this schedule that I think both confuses people and excites them at the same time is playing Wake Forest, but it's not a conference game. Remind people kind of how that came about and why it was felt like that made sense.
It was Wake Forest's idea. They reached out to us. Gosh, you schedule so far in advance. I don't think it was like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe more than that. But they reached out to us, and they pitched us on the idea, and they said, look, you know, we'd want to play Carolina more often than we do in the cross-division matchups. We think it'd be great for us to play you guys as a non-conference game. It's a short trip. You don't have to spend much money to travel. Wake fans can come here. Our fans can go there when we go back. It's a good opponent, and we thought it made a lot of sense. Checked with the ACC. Bubba liked the idea. The ACC liked the idea, so we went ahead and did it. I really thought more schools would do it after we did it once, but I don't think I've seen anybody else do it.
No, I don't think so.
But it's something we might do again in the future. You know, obviously we could do it with Syracuse. We could do it with any of the teams in the Atlantic other than NC State to play them more frequently.
You mentioned how far in advance. How far? I mean, so what is a typical, and I know it changes, you know, there's some unique cases, but traditionally, how far ahead do these things get planned out and get scheduled?
We are contracted right now every single game through 2026. The one game
2026.
I know. The one game that we don't have contracted yet in 2027, we already have a verbal agreement for. So pretty much 2028 is the year we're working on now. It's funny, I take things to Bubba all the time, and I say, Bubba, hey, so-and-so wants to play us in 30 and 31. And Bubba looks at me and goes, are you kidding me? but it gets pretty far out.
Why? Why is it that way? Why? And I mean, I get that moving a football team and traveling is not an easy thing, but why does it have to be so far in advance?
You know, I just think if you don't do it, you get behind. I mean, we had a hole in 2020, and it was really nerve-wracking. I mean, it kept me up at nights, the guy in charge of making sure we have 12 games every year. And the reason we had a hole is we agreed to do the Wake Forest home and home.
Right.
We agreed to do South Carolina every 4 years in Charlotte. And then after we did that, we got our Notre Dame dates. And that created this island where we needed one game in 2020. And we didn't need one in 21. We didn't need one in 19. That's why we ended up doing Auburn week two in 2020. But that was down to the wire. I mean, we were almost 2 years away from that game before we finally got that contract
right.
done. You don't want to get put in a point like that where you have only one or only two or worse yet, no options. So that's why I think you schedule so far out in advance.
It feels like it's sort of become kind of the new custom for ACC teams to play a non-conference game the week before Thanksgiving. Why does that whole work, and is that something that's going to continue into the future since we basically know the future for the next decade?
Yeah, you know, it's real interesting. Bubba, right after Coach Fedora got here, you know, Bubba said, hey, let's get in a room and let's talk about a scheduling philosophy. Instead of all the time talking about this or that, let's put on paper what's our philosophy overall. So we had that meeting, and then when the ACC almost went to 9 conference games and then stayed at 8, when some things changed up, we had the meeting again. So we've got a written philosophy for us of what our scheduling is going to be. We haven't yet met with Coach Brown. You know, once he gets off the recruiting trail, we'll repeat that process and say, Coach, you know, here's the philosophy we worked under. Here's the schedules that we developed based on that philosophy. Now, what's our philosophy now that you're here, and what adjustments do we want to make moving forward, knowing that most of the next many years is already booked. So part of that philosophy was let's play when possible, not every year, but when possible. Let's play our FCS game the week before we play NC State because it's an opportunity to you know, maybe not have as tough an opponent when you're getting ready to play your biggest rival. The other philosophies we looked at in there were, you know, let's play a good mix of marquee Big Five or Power Five opponents, you know, Auburn in Atlanta, South Carolina in Charlotte. When Notre Dame comes here, obviously that certainly fits that bill. Let's also look at playing Group of Five teams, either as a home-and-home or a two-for-one, but let's make sure when we do that it fits our recruiting footprint. That's why we went to Old Dominion. That's why we'll go to Georgia State. We've even got UNC Charlotte on the schedule, 2025, I think. That makes sense for us because it's in our recruiting footprint.
You mentioned Notre Dame. I'd just be interested how that unique relationship that the ACC has with them, just what kind of challenges does that present as someone who is trying to build the schedule for another team in the conference?
You know, I would say to the ACC and Notre Dame's credit, they've done a really good job of getting us the dates way far in advance. I didn't bring my handy-dandy schedule with me, but I think we've got a Notre Dame game like in 2036. So we already know.
I've already got my hotel room for that game.
you might want to. I think we've got them in 21 there, I think, 22 here. And then we already knew it's all the way through 2036. So if it was a situation where we didn't know until a couple years out when we were going to play them, it would be really challenging. But because they've committed so far in advance, it's easier.
All right, I understand that you're not going to be able to give a definitive answer to this question. But, I mean, do you really see this relationship with Notre Dame lasting? And I mean, the way that it is currently set up, lasting until 2036, I mean, that's 17 years from now.
I have no idea.
Right.
What it's going to be like in 2036. Yeah, I mean, I'd love for him to just join the ACC.
Sure.
I mean, to me,
Adam,
it makes,
get on that.
Okay. I'll make the call.
they're a great academic institution. They're a great brand. They have broad-based athletics programs, many sports, many student-athletes. I mean, to me, the ACC is a great home for them.
Okay, so this current schedule, or the one that just came out. We talked about how challenging it is. As you look at it, if you could go, you know, I guess 20 years ago, Rick, when you were making this schedule for 2019, you know, what would you say? Maybe I do this a little differently, or do you just love it?
you know, you're always a little bit nervous when you give the – because we get the schedule about a day in advance. That's it. You're always a little nervous when you give it to the head coach.
Right.
What's he going to like? What's he not going to like? Is he going to be upset about something? Gave this to Coach Brown, and his response was awesome. This looks fantastic. So that's kind of my take on it. Yeah. I'm fired up for it. You know, we already talked about it a little bit, but South Carolina and Charlotte to open up is awesome. Miami at home for our first home game is going to be incredible. App State, where Coach Brown was a head coach for the first time. I also think they're going to bring a lot of fans and a lot of energy to this stadium. So our fans need to do the exact same thing. Then we got Clemson. And then you got Duke and Virginia right there together. And that's just a great matchup for us. You know, academic schools, conference opponents in our division. And then we'll have senior day for Mercer, where we'll do a whole bunch of other things to honor those players. So I love it. I think it's a great schedule. You know, the only kind of funky thing for me is there's such a long gap between Clemson and then Duke, because we're on the road twice. We've got an open date in there. So it's going to feel like we play a number of games in Keenan, we take a long break, and then we finish with a flurry.
Right.
One of the things we talk about on here a lot, because it's a hot topic of kind of college sports conversation, is attendance. And I think it's fair to say we both think one of the kind of underrated factors there is the fans don't know what time the game starts until 13 or 6 days beforehand. Do you see any relief in the future that would help them in any way plan their future Saturdays a little more effectively?
I hope so. You know, obviously, we benefit greatly from our TV contracts. Not only does it provide us a huge amount of revenue, which is how we field 28 teams and 800 student athletes, also with the ACC network already online digitally and soon to be on a full linear cable channel, that is awesome exposure for lacrosse, for soccer, for baseball, for softball. So there's tremendous benefits that come from our TV contracts. And because we're in a network relationship now, we're in a profit-sharing arrangement with ESPN, along with the normal traditional royalties. So we want them to maximize the number of homes that they're in. We want them to maximize their ratings. We have a huge vested interest in that, and a lot of that is being able to put the games on at the right times. So, you know, as much as we'd like to have more advance warning, as much as we'd like to have more input into the kickoff times, I think we all understand why it is the way it is.
Is there truly that much difference from a ratings standpoint between Carolina and Virginia playing at 3:30 versus playing at 7? I mean, would that legitimately have a financial impact on the athletic department's bottom line ratings-wise?
We had that exact conversation with ESPN, two of their top senior executives, one who she oversees the entire ACC network for ESPN, and then another who is, I think, the senior vice president for all of ESPN for public relations. They were both here just 2 days ago. And we had that dialogue with them, and yeah, it does. You know, it's about getting the right thing on at the right time and then strategically where you place things and how you piece it all together. So it does have a big impact. I loved Bubba's pitch to these two now. Bubba said, hey, I'll cut you a deal. We'll play 12 noon every single away football game. And just give us 7 p.m. for every home football game. And then we're good to go.
That seems like fair.
Easy fix. Rick, of course, in addition to the schedule, you've just been around Tar Heel football a bunch for a long time, but especially here in recent weeks with the return of Coach Brown. Give us just kind of a feel of what's going on around Tar Heel football right now, kind of feel in that building and just what their priorities are at this moment.
It's been an absolute blast. Just the energy that he brings, the positivity that he brings. I mean, you know, when Bubba first told me after Coach Fedora got let go, he said, what would you think of Mac Brown coming back? I said, time out, boss. Let me disclose a possible conflict of interest. I have a deep personal love for that man.
Right.
Now, having said that, let me tell you all the reasons why I think that would be absolutely awesome if that happened. And really, it's come true. I mean, he's brought so much energy, so much attention to detail. He's brought in such a great staff. They are positive, they are upbeat, and they are as demanding as you can possibly be as coaches. And you just feel a different energy, a different atmosphere, a different vibe from everybody in the building, from the players, the people that work there, the staff, the recruits that come in and out of there. It's been a lot of fun.
How, if at all, has this version of Mac Brown that you've been around on a daily basis been different from the previous version of Mac Brown that you were around on a daily basis?
It's a great question because obviously, it's a totally different perspective for me. I played for him. I've never worked for him.
Sure.
And now I'm starting to tell people, as great as he was to play for, he's even better to work for. And I say that because he's just so direct. He's so positive. He tells you exactly what he's thinking. You know exactly what he needs from you. And he will demand that you tell him exactly what you're thinking. I mean, if you hesitate at all, he said, no, tell me what you think. Don't worry, I'll make the decisions, but tell me what you think so I can make a better decision. That's just been really fun. It's been really rewarding to be in that kind of a work environment. I've really enjoyed that part.
Rick, I'm not trying to put you in a difficult spot or anything negative about Coach Fedora or anything like that. What do people not know kind of happens when there's a coaching transition? Like, what's something – I mean, I think fans go, okay, this guy or this man or woman is no longer the coach. This man or woman is now the coach. But what is some of the stuff that happens when there is a transition like that that maybe people don't understand or appreciate?
It's incredibly hard. I mean, I'm sitting here telling you how exciting and fun it's been, and it really has been. But that was only after going
sure.
through some really hard times. I mean, this affects lives. It affects not only the coaches. It affects their spouses. It affects their children. You know, even the support staff that typically doesn't get changed, they're just in such a state of, I don't want to use the word stress, but just uncertainty. So it's not fun. It's fun once you get all the new folks in place and you start moving on with the new staff. But getting to that point, especially with somebody like Coach Fedora, just an awesome human being and an awesome family. The way he handled everything while he was here at Carolina, even the way he handled being exited out of Carolina, first class, positive, and truly a great man. So that part's really, really hard.
Yeah. Whenever we have you on, we like to talk about kind of game day experience and kind of the reaction that you've had, and you work a lot with or try to talk to fans a bunch to get feedback. I know clearly the results have probably made that a little more difficult here the last couple of years, but you've made a lot of changes. Your staff, everybody at Carolina has made a lot of changes. What has been the feedback to all of that at Keenan Stadium? What have you liked, not liked, those kind of things?
Yeah, we've as I think I've said on the show before, we've done a lot of surveying of fans, mm-hmm. you know, both through electronic surveys, but also just talking to people face to face. And we feel like we identified the 8 things that most needed to change, things that were really, really important and yet people weren't satisfied with here. I'm not going to say we've fixed all of them for good, but I think we've made significant improvements in all 8 of them. Seat comfort, the chair backs.
Yeah.
Tailgating, turnkey tailgating with tailgate guys. Availability of food throughout the venue. We've made some enhancements and we're looking to make more. So from here, we're just going to keep doing the exact same thing. I'm excited because in 17, we sold about 31,000 season tickets. Obviously, we struggled that year. And then the next year is when we took a whole bunch of seats out of the stadium and made the seats a lot better. If we get back to where we were in 17, we're pretty much sold out every single game. So I think you really saw – you didn't see the impact of the seats we thought we would see last year because we were struggling. We were 2-9, and even when ticket sales were high, we had a pretty good no-show rate. The energy that Coach Brown brings – the winning that he's going to bring is going to fill up Keenan, and then it's going to make us make all those other changes happen more quickly.
People always talk about selling the tickets, and of course that's important because you need that money. But you just touched on the no-show rate. How do you get those people who have the tickets in hand and they buy them because it's something they do every year, but then Saturday comes around and the kid's got a soccer game or they find some reason not to come? How do you get the no-show people to be shows?
It's amazing to me. We track every single game now for football, men's basketball, percentage of tickets sold and percentage of tickets scanned. And the discrepancy, Adam, blows my mind. I mean, you've paid money for these tickets. Use them.
Right.
So that's why we've done some things this past year in football where we did a rewards program. If you scan all your tickets, you're entered to win certain prizes. We're trying to basically say if you have tickets, use them all. If you're not going to use them all, give them to a Tar Heel fan who is going to use them. Wow, what a great gift to give to somebody. If you don't have time to do that, just let us know you're not going to use them, and we'll reissue them to a student or a military person or somebody like that. So we're working really hard to do everything we can, obviously, to sell every single ticket, but then also have a whole bunch of marketing plans and other things in place to increase that percent scan rate as well. The number one way to do that, guys, is win.
Yeah.
but we're trying to do everything else that we can to accelerate that too.
All right, let's talk about something really important. When is the new Pod World headquarters building going to be completed? How is our progress on that building?
We topped it off the other day. It was pretty cool. Frank Bloom, the contractor building that building, they're doing a fantastic job. And we had a ceremony the other day where we put the final steel beam on the top of the building.
Adam failed to sign it. He was going to and messed up.
I thought about signing it, but I'm like, if anybody's seeing that beam, that's not good, because that means the building's been destroyed. So I just went ahead and passed.
After this devastation, here's Rick. Oh, hey, Steiny.
My signature. No, I've got confidence they'll be done in July, and we need them to be.
Yeah.
Because once they're done, we got to move a whole bunch of equipment, including the Lucas Angel Pod World headquarters into that new
Sorry,
building.
ACC Network, you got to take a back seat.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of Pod memorabilia that's
got
to go.
I've got
in there.
Two boxes sitting in a corner in my house that I'm sure my wife's going to be ready to get out of there.
We've got an acrylic cutout of our heads.
Yeah, that's right.
That's going to need an important spot.
Yeah, also true. Okay, Steiny, what else is going on just before we let you go? I know you got to go, but kind of what else is taking your time right now? What else is kind of moving and shaking right now around Carolina and Carolina Athletics?
You know, obviously, we've got a basketball team that's playing great. We got, as always, all kinds of things going on with Carolina Athletics. We had our scholarship dinner earlier this week, and that's probably my favorite event of the year. We do it twice. We do one in the fall for all the spring and summer sports, or spring and winter sports, and then we do one in January for all the fall sports. It's usually a room of about 500 people, half of them scholarship student athletes, the other half the donors who donated those scholarships.
Wow.
They mingle together. We have a former student athlete come speak. This time we had Ryan Sims and Billy D. Greenwood do it.
Oh, cool.
Because football was there, and they were both fantastic. We have a current student athlete speak. We did a little differently this time. We had the entire field hockey team standing on stage with their national championship trophy, and then Marissa Creator, one of their captains, gave the current student athlete address. And it's really cool because you always hear these stories about what Carolina means to current and former student athletes, and then they're telling those stories in front of the donors that provided their scholarships and thanking them for doing it. That's one of the neatest things we ever do. So that's something we spent a lot of time on this week.
You going to hook us up with Ryan Sims for the pod, Rick? You gotta hook us up.
Ryan and Billy D. I'd do both of them. Billy D's just got a fantastic story. He's got a daughter here now, junior at Carolina, who full academic scholarship, Dean's List. It's just a great story. He's done so much with law enforcement as a police officer and then working overseas in counterterrorism in Afghanistan, Pakistan, all kinds of places like that. And he was a great Tar Heel when he played here. Ryan Sims had a 10-year NFL career, and he's got a great story, too, just about how he came back as a 34-year-old to get his degree, walking around campus with all the money in the world after being an NFL player, going to class all the time, and then now he works for Cisco in sales. So they'd be great for you.
Hey, Rick. Hook your friends up here, dude.
I got their numbers right here. I'll text them when we're done.
Okay, reminder, just remind people about tickets one more time. Oh, and then I do want to ask you one more question. I know we're getting low on time. Spring game. That was listed on the schedule this year, which maybe it's happened before, but I didn't remember. Kind of what is the early thought process about spring game and how you guys want to handle it?
Jones Angel and Adam Lucas are going to help me get 50,500 people to the spring game.
Go ahead, Adam. Get us going.
I don't have that many $10 bills.
That day, we'll have the Tar Heel 10-miler at 7 a.m. There's also a four-mile race, Jones.
So oh, you good. Could do That's that. More my style.
Is there a four-tenths of a mile race?
There's a kid's fun run, Adam.
Like something on a tricycle?
A kid's fun run. That'd be perfect.
I'll dominate you six-year-olds. I got fourth place.
So come and run at 10, come and run at 7. Women's lacrosse will play Syracuse in our new lacrosse soccer stadium at noon. Men's lacrosse will play Syracuse in our new lacrosse soccer stadium at 3.
Nice.
We'll do the spring game at 5. And we're working on some other things that would be really, really cool around that spring game. So we do really need every Carolina fan to come out that day. We're even thinking about maybe getting a medal. Run the 10-miler or the 4-miler, come to the women's lacrosse game, come to the men's lacrosse game, come to the spring game, and we'll give you something. I don't know what it is yet. We're still trying to dream it up.
But, sure.
Really, really hoping we can get a great turnout to celebrate everything going on that day and to celebrate Coach Brown being back and really get this team kicked off for a great 2019 season. That's why we put it on the schedule.
Is there a signing day event this year?
Yes. Will be announced later this week.
Okay.
You will, to be invited.
Right.
You will have to have either been a 2018 season ticket holder, football, and in the Rams Club, or you have to have already made your deposit for your 2019 season tickets or you have to be a football letter winner. But if you are one of those three things, we're going to invite you to a signing day celebration in the Blue Zone on February 6th from 6 to 7:30, I believe it is. But we'll get all that information out later this week.
All right, last thing, tickets. How can people get them if they want them?
GoHeels.com or call the ticket office.
Rick, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy. Appreciate it. And I have a feeling that we'll have you again on the pod in the future.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
So, Adam, what I wanted to talk about but then wanted to make sure everybody heard it first was it's crazy to me that the schedule is built out that far in advance. But, I mean, Rick answered the question just right. It's almost like everybody else is doing it, so you've got to do it now, because if you don't do it, then you get in the situation like he talked about where you all of a sudden are like a year or two out and you have an open week and you run the risk of either not having 12 games or having to pay somebody an exorbitant amount of money to come play a one-off game at your stadium, and it puts you in a bad spot. And so it's just crazy to me to think about that you have to be doing these things to kind of keep up with everybody else. You have to be scheduling 15 and 20 years in advance. That's wild.
It is a little absurd that Rick is going to sit down with Mac Brown and have a conversation about Mac Brown's scheduling philosophy, which really makes absolutely no difference at all.
Because, I mean, Mac Brown is likely not going to be the head coach in 2036 or whatever.
Yeah. So, Coach Brown, tell us what kind of schedule you'd like to play. That's nice. Okay, here's the schedule until 2026. I hope maybe this fits.
So Rick said what? That it was pretty set until 2026, 27, isn't that what he said? But that he had talked to people about games in 2031 and 2035 or something. It's like, Mac Brown doesn't care if the schedule is in 2036. That's 17 years from now.
The people who will play in that game are born. Just born. Yeah. They're not walking yet. Why would it? It doesn't make a lot of sense. Another thing that we talked about with Rick, and I was thinking about it as he was talking. Did we say what day the spring game actually is?
I don't know if we said
it's April 13th.
Yeah, April 13th. Which, I got to say, I like the plan for that. I thought that was a pretty neat idea.
That sounds cool.
About kind of having those things and almost having like a little checklist where if you do all of it, you get rewarded in some way. And it'll be a great way to have great crowds in the new stadium to see two really good lacrosse programs that the Tar Heels have. You know, the Bubba's real big on healthy heels and having everybody active, so you got the run early in the day. It sounds like, and again, it's still a couple months away, and it sounds like there's still some fine details that need to be hammered out, but I think the general plan for that day sounds really cool.
Well, I think I've said on here before, one of the most fun things about the spring game, back in the days it was called like the blue-white football game, was that it was on Super Saturday.
Yeah.
And so you had as many programs as you could possibly find playing at home that day, and you just walk from one to the next one and see as many Carolina teams as you could, and maybe there was a baseball game, maybe there was a lacrosse game, then you catch some of the football game. People like coming to Chapel Hill.
Yeah. So good weather, mid-April.
Oh, you've decided there'll be good weather?
No rain that day.
Okay,
I already know.
That's good.
I tell you another thing I like. I like the 5 o'clock kickoff for the spring game.
Me too.
I think that's a great idea.
I do too.
A little bit later in the day, everybody's had their time to do whatever they want to do to get ready for that event.
You mean like read the roster?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Have a pack of nabs and a Diet Coke like I do when I'm driving back from Winston.
Sure.
It just, again, it's not 100% in stone everything that's going to happen, but it sounds like the plan is really good. Can I just say one more thing about Mac Brown in general? I saw the video, and I hope, I'm guessing you probably did, and I hope you the listener did, of Mac Brown kind of just going through the schedule a little bit. And two things, something it just struck me as I was watching this. Mac Brown wasn't saying anything like super in-depth about these games. He was going, oh, you know, I worked around Manny Diaz as a terrific coach, and I worked with him at Texas, and, you know, Miami's a great program, going to be tough, we need you there. He didn't say anything, like, mind-blowing about any game. But you left it going, yeah, Mac Brown, yeah, Carolina football. Like, he is so good at that. He's just so good. Remember when we were talking about LaFonso Ellis, like, makes you feel good after that's how Mac Brown is. It's like, you feel good. You're excited just by hearing him say, oh, we got to beat our rivals, Duke, Virginia, those are important games. It's like, yeah, It's just, I don't know what it is about him, but he has that charismatic aspect to him that just makes you want to be on board.
I think everything that's happened with Carolina football in the last month or so makes you as a Carolina football fan feel included.
Yes. Yes, Adam.
And I think for a long time there were some people who felt like they were kind of trying to be kept at arm's length. And it doesn't feel like Mac Brown wants to keep you at arm's length. He wants to put his arm around you and sit down and talk to you about how those darn Tar Heel Rascals are going to go over there. They're going to get that victory bell back. They're going to ride it down Franklin Street, ring-a-ding-ding, right outside of every store on Franklin Street. And then they're going to go get ready to beat the Wolfpack because those in-state rivals are important. That's all people want. They just want to feel included, and they want to feel like they're a part of something, even though they don't play on the team, just that they're appreciated. And stuff like that, I think, makes them feel appreciated.
Adam, anything else schedule-wise, football-wise? Clearly, as we move through the next couple of months, the signing day event Rick talked about, spring game, we will have stuff on the pod about that kind of stuff. We're going to continue to try to have football-oriented conversations, and we got to get through signing day, and then we're going to talk to some more assistant coaches. We had the show right before Christmas where we had a bunch of coaches on for a shorter amount of time. We're going to try to get those guys again and let you get to know all these new assistants and new staff members around Carolina football. We need to get through signing day before that's going to be a realistic thing to have happen, but we do want to do that. But anything else before we move on?
This isn't football related, but you mentioned LaFonso Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of him over the weekend. He needs to be on the pod.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's your boy. Why can't you just tell him to stop by? People love it when he does the Carolina games.
Well, I think he's good at it. Again, positive, makes you feel good. Knows the game. That's all you need. That's all you need, Adam. That and a little bit of sunshine. That's all you need. All right, before we talk a little hoops, hoop it up, let me remind you that it's the 225th birthday of UNC, and at unc.edu, it's your source for everything happening at the nation's oldest public university since 1793. Tar Heels have paved the way to a better world. Again, unc.edu. And StubHub, favorite seat courtside? That's good. Favorite seat comes with a bird's eye view? No problem. Head to StubHub, grab 100% verified tickets. You know you'll get in. They've been hooking up fans with amazing seats for more than 17 years. StubHub, official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. So the Tar Heels, last action Tuesday night against Notre Dame. And Adam, this is going to sound very basic, but I thought the most important thing that happened is that the Tar Heels won the game. This was just a game that they could not afford to lose. And it's easy to say that now that they've won it. Because if they had lost it, we'd have been going, ah, it's a long year, crazy things happen. But just for the feel of things, how ugly the Louisville game was, to bounce back and have a game that was not as Carolina played better against Notre Dame than it did against Louisville, but to still have a game where you didn't shoot as well as you wanted, you made some mistakes, but you found a way to win. And that was something we talked about after the Louisville game, that Carolina has struggled to find a way to win. Roy Williams talked about it, struggled to find a way to win when they didn't play their prettiest basketball against a quality opponent. And I thought they did that on Tuesday night, where they shot under 40%. They had long stretches where the offense wasn't working. But their defense was pretty good a large majority of the game. They controlled the glass for the most part and did enough to win the game against a solid team.
I thought it was interesting that Carolina could not defend Notre Dame's ball screen at all in the first half. They looked like they had just been introduced to the idea like 5 minutes beforehand. They go in the locker room. Roy Williams very pointedly informs them that they could do that better. They come out and try to defend it differently. They changed up the way they were doing it. That didn't work either. So they go back to the original way, and then all of a sudden it works. Everyone who always says, well, why doesn't the coach make an adjustment? Sometimes you don't need to make an adjustment. You just need to do what you're doing better. And that's what Carolina did, and Notre Dame kind of ran out of gas. In the annals of ACC players who you don't think about much but are sneakily pretty good, John Mooney's like the captain of that team.
Well, I really think he and Jordan Wara from Louisville, mean, these are guys who are in the running for that most improved in the ACC. I mean, Moody was okay last year for Notre Dame. Had a really good game against Carolina in the Smith Center, but that was by far his most productive game of the year last year for Notre Dame. Now, I mean, you look at his stats, and he's doing what he did to the Tar Heels the other night, and he's doing it every night. In fact, he didn't score as much the other night as he has been for a fair amount of the ACC, and they've played four conference games. He has three double-doubles, and the other one he had 9 points and double-digit rebounds. So he's bringing it every night for them. He reminds me a lot of Luke May just in the way that he plays, but he's shooting a better percentages than Luke this season. And that's why his scoring is pretty. I mean, he had 27 against Boston College the game before Notre Dame played Carolina. He had, what was it, 19 rebounds in the game? And so he had more rebounds than the rest of his teammates combined. And just you tip your cap to him, man, because he's tall. He's hard to guard. And I thought, there was one play, Carolina was trying to take control of the game late, before they did. I think maybe they were up 3 or 5, and he took a long 2-point shot from the right side of the hoop. Garrison Brooks played it well, had a hand in his face. It's a shot that if you had seen it before the result, you'd have gone, okay, we'll take them taking that shot, and boom, nailed it. And so he was just, yes, I'm impressed with how much better he is. Not much better. How much more complete he is as a player.
He is a good player.
Yeah.
Nasir Little.
Well, I was going to mention, I mean, I thought Brandon Robinson in the first half and Nasir Little in the second half were huge for Carolina, giving them a scoring punch off the bench where the starters, you know, Garrison Brooks didn't score a ton. Luke May had 14, but I think it took 16 or 17 shots to get those 14 points. Those two guys were enormous in this game for Carolina.
I guess B-Rob first. B-Rob is the annual Tar Heel who everyone wants to know why he's playing in December, and then in February wants him to start. He's that guy this year. When he shoots it, I think it's going in every time.
Yeah, we've gotten to that point now with his 3-point shot that it's pretty – that you feel really good when he takes it.
And he talked on the radio after the game about – like it wasn't a technical change in his shot or anything – he just felt like he wasn't trying to rush quite as much and be quite as eager to take the shot, which sometimes he can be eager to take the shot. But he said he's just letting the game come to him more, and, man, he's been important. And you see the scoring, but I think he's a pretty good defender, and he's around the ball almost all the time. If he's not getting the ball, he's getting a hand on the ball.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of player Roy Williams loves, and you're starting to see Robinson get some longer stretches, which I think is a reward for that kind of play.
Yeah, I was going to say, in addition to the shooting is how active he is. He is just – when he's on the floor, he tries to make something happen. And he was the one who, after Seventh Woods, correctly got the kudos for getting back and blocking the shot. It was Robinson who was also hustling back. And because he was hustling, was able to pick up the ball before it went out of bounds and then get it back to Seventh Woods, who got fouled going the other direction and made the free throw. So
you can't guarantee your playing time by saying, well, I'll just make 3 threes in every game in my 16 minutes. There'll be a game where he's 0-for-4. But if you also make those plays, then you've still got a place, and he does.
And then you mentioned Nasir Little. You know, Roy Williams on Monday night said he thought Nasir Little had a couple of the best practices he had had all season long. He also said, which we didn't know at the time, that Little was sick on Saturday when Carolina played Louisville. Really just was not feeling good. And Coach Williams said, in hindsight, probably played him more in that game than I should have. He wasn't feeling good. It was clear that he was not 100%. But what you saw, I thought, Adam, in that second half was he passed up a couple of jump shots, which right now, for whatever reason, the jump shot is not going in at a high rate for him. He was smart about when he attacked. And something that I will be interested to see if Carolina continues to do is when he finds the right matchup, when the other team's in the man-to-man and somebody who he knows he can take is guarding him, he is then being smart and aggressive. And Carolina is allowing him to do that. They're recognizing it, too, and getting out of the way and allowing him to do it. And I'll just be interested to see if he can continue to find those matchups, because clearly other teams know that. I mean, Mike Bray stood right in front of me and pointed to him at one point. He was like, He is a driver. Don't let him drive. And so people know that. But when the matchup is right, he can still do it just because he's that athletically gifted.
Well, when he shoots jump shots, he's one of hundreds of guys who shoot jump shots. When he drives, there's not many guys like him who drive, and very few of those are guarding him in those situations.
Right.
That's what makes him valuable. And, man, I really like Nasir Little, and I think he's handled it all about as well as you possibly can. So this is not about him. It's more about everyone else. I really think there might be some people who want Nasir Little to be good more than they want Carolina to be good. Because when he had a good game on Tuesday, it was like everything he did was times 10 to the point that it was almost like, well, Carolina should just change everything they do and just let him do that every single game. Well, that's it doesn't work like that. And everyone involved in the team knows that, including Nasir Little. It's not the Nasir Little Tar Heels. Nasir Little is on the Tar Heels, and they're trying to find a way to work him in. And Tuesday, they found that, and it worked really well. But that doesn't mean anything for tomorrow against Miami. He might have a bad game. He might not feel good. His hand might hurt. Maybe somebody stole his dog. I don't know. But if he doesn't come out and have a great game tomorrow, it doesn't mean that everything's gone wrong. It means he's a freshman who's going to have good games like he did on Tuesday, and he's going to have bad games like he did the previous Saturday against Louisville. That's just what happens. Kobe White has good games and bad games too. But for some people, the freakout level is much lower with him. So he'll figure it out if he'll just back off a little.
Well, you know why the freakout level is that way, and it's because people are convinced that if Nasir Little doesn't have success, that the Tar Heels are never going to get a one-and-done type of player again, which is silly.
But the success he has in January
right.
has nothing to do with it.
Right.
It's still just as likely today as it was in October that he's going to be the South Regional MVP. And if he does, all anybody's going to talk about is, oh, what a learning experience this year has been. Boy, Carolina's really done great with him, and he's come out and performed so well. It's the middle of January. If he doesn't have it figured out today, you know what that means? That means he's like 99% of the other freshman Carolina basketball players. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all.
That move he made on the baseline was pretty smooth.
Yes.
A little jab step to the middle and drove baseline.
Well, and he talked about it after the game. He said, you know, the reason he was able to make that move, and if you go back and look at it, you'll see, is the other four Tar Heels were at the free throw line or above. So there was nobody else under there. There was no Luke May posting up. There was no Garrison Brooks trying to set a screen. There was nothing but space. And, I mean, I don't think it's any big secret. That's when he's at his best, when he has those types of lanes.
Roy Williams talked on Monday. We got a good question on the radio show about, you know, you don't have John May or Tyler Hansbrough or whoever, that type of low post player on this team. So how do you still get good shots when you're not in transition or get an easy look naturally? And I think that's a really valid question and an important question right now, considering how Carolina has struggled some offensively in conference play. And Coach Williams talked about ball movement and spacing. And he said, we have to be, and I'm speaking as him here, you know, we have to be better at spacing the floor and spreading the floor in the half court. And if you're a big guy and the ball didn't come to you when you have good position, then get out of the way. And talked about make the easy, if you make six easy passes on a possession, then there's a pretty good likelihood that you're going to get a good high percentage shot that we want to take. He said those are the two keys in his opinion, and obviously his opinion is the one that matters the most, is space the floor, move the ball in yourself, and he thinks that Carolina's offense will get back right. So I think that's important.
Well, and we've seen there have been a couple times this year where Carolina's late shot clock strategy is kind of throw the ball to Kobe White and hope for the best. I think moving everyone out of the way and letting Nasir Little do something, depending on who's guarding him, as long as he's willing to see the other four guys. If he takes that as a hard and fast rule that he must go to the basket and shoot, maybe not so much. But if he can go to the basket and get fouled or find one of these other guys who we think are pretty good shooters, that's a pretty high percentage play.
Adam, I have a little Jones, a little mini list today, but
nice.
Do you have a list?
I do.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
I'm just going to include my list in your list.
Okay.
But your list, go first.
Okay. A lot of things on the list today. We mentioned last pod that I had made a major error by not signing the beam that was going in Pod World headquarters.
Yeah. Rick brought up a good point, though. Like, you're never really going to see the beam unless something terrible has happened.
Though. And it's like it's within the mojo of the building.
Yeah.
You want that mojo.
That's true.
And I was worried that we had missed our chance.
No. Somebody picked us up.
Basically, I missed our chance. Yeah. And it was Kerry and Abram Graham, our friends from across the pond, who had much more savvy than I did and got a Sharpie from our friend Bob Ward, who works in the basketball museum, and signed the beam. And not only did they sign it, they put see you later, big grits.
Yeah, they did.
That was a heads-up play. That's being a thinker.
Yep.
And we appreciate that because now the building has all the good mojo.
Yep.
And they sent us a picture, and we tweeted it out. So it's verified that it's there.
Yep.
Let's see. Jason McCorkle sent us some incredible artwork.
From our friend over at Rival Cutouts.
Of Big Grits.
Yeah.
We showed this artwork to Big Grits. And I think it's fair to say that he loved it.
He was impressed.
Yeah.
After he could barely, he's Big Grits to the point now where he's that guy who's got to like hold the phone way out at arm's length. If he didn't have, because he didn't have his glasses with him. So he's like, wait. Oh, does that say see you later, Big Grits?
I was a little disappointed. Another person who was there at that time was Amy Hoots, the wife of professional unicyclist Eric Hoots.
Yeah. He only needs one wheel.
And as we showed it to her, she said, oh, look, he's got the Quaker Oats with him.
Oh, boy.
Come on, Amy.
Yeah. Grits. They're grits. Oots.
This is all fun and games, and we try to have fun on the pod, but every once in a while we have to do something serious, and that's what this is.
Okay.
Some journalism. Jones, I've discovered something important, and that is that Lil Baby and DaBaby are two different people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wasn't 100% sure of that when Leaky was telling us. I thought maybe... I mean, they're close enough. But what I don't understand is, whichever one came first, and I think it was Lil Baby, why didn't DaBaby's friends say DaBaby? There's already a Lil Baby. Why don't you be something different?
Hey, you can't hold down fate, Adam. If you're DaBaby, you're DaBaby.
Well, so as Leaky recommended, I went and listened to some hot tracks from these two artists.
Uh-huh. Who you like more?
I probably like Lil Baby a little more.
Oh, boy.
DaBaby Jones has such hit songs as Blank Blank. That's the actual name of the song.
Oh, I thought you were censoring it.
No, it's called Blank Blank, but if we were to play it, you would definitely have to censor it. It is not about like taking a vocabulary test or something, like filling in the blanks. That's not what it's about. Lil Baby has a hit song called Drip Too Hard.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Not about plumbing or some sort of water issue. Like Hurricane Florence.
Okay, when I need to talk about two things, and these were both on my list.
Okay.
And they both have to do with our conversation with Leaky.
Sure.
Number one, the fact that Leaky didn't even know what Star Wars was was disconcerting to me.
How is that possible?
Like, I can understand if he had never seen it, but the fact that he had never even heard of it, like, he'd never even heard of it.
Like, he knew as much about Star Wars as I knew about DaBaby.
Right. How is that even possible?
I don't know.
And I'm guessing Leaky isn't alone in this. I think it kind of shook my core a little bit.
The next player we have on, we need to ask them if they know.
At least know what it is. Or
right,
they,
like, have you ever heard of it?
Right.
Not like, do you know every word of the movie?
No, of course, and that's fine.
But like, are you familiar with it, that it exists?
Part two, and I thought this happened when it happened in the conversation, but then in going back and when I was putting it together, confirmed it. Leaky has added Adam to our vernacular.
Yep.
And that is when, I believe it was when he and I were talking about how much we enjoyed the Marvel movies.
Right.
Something I know you don't understand.
Right.
And I was saying that I like something, and Leaky threw down the, like, he kind of laughed and said, yeah, retweet.
Yeah. And but he did it way cooler than what you just did.
Well, come on. I can't match Leaky and coolness. Come
right.
on. But so now instead of going like, yes, sir, I agree with you, or I too enjoy that, we can just be like, retweet, and there it is. Mm. See, trendsetters.
What about, do you think you could work this in on Saturday at Miami when, like, let's say Kenny Williams makes a big three,
yeah,
and Eric gives you the, got it, that's a big shot by Kenny Williams, and you can just be like, retweet.
Yeah, just don't, I'll just retweet.
And then just stare at him and see what he does.
Where he brings up a really good point. He says something like, Jones, you know, I've been really impressed with Carolina's ball movement in this game. It's really allowing them to get to the basket a little bit easier. I think that's a real reason they're shooting 79% in the game. And I'll go, retweet, Eric. Retweet. Or then I could go, quote tweet. I agree with you. So thank you, Leaky, for adding to our vernacular.
Yeah, I appreciated that.
I do want this.
Yeah, he made us better.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do when you're coming off the bench. I thought this was a fantastic idea from Mark Williams, who said that my arms crossed pose,
dude,
should be added to the fourth quarter montage video at Keenan Stadium.
Okay, so we've had the opportunity to take a couple of arms crossed photos here recently, which we always enjoy. Did one with Leaky. Took one with Kyle and Ryan and Caitlin before the Notre Dame game. Mm-hmm. Caitlin really got to work on her serious face. She couldn't stop laughing for the photo. So, Caitlin, we got to have you work on that. But, I mean, Adam, it's like if there was an AP poll of serious face, you're the clear-cut number one. And I don't get how you do it. It's just like your face goes completely slack.
Yeah.
And I can't do that. Like, I always kind of give it the, like I'm giving you, like, a little half smirk.
Yeah, you have
look.
A little smirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've got, like, this.
No.
You've got this, like, you just said something to me.
Yeah.
That has prompted me to want to kill you.
Yeah. Sir, we're about to throw hands.
Yes.
That's what I think as I'm retweet. Looking at the camera. We are about to throw hands.
You kind of you intimidated me right then.
Yeah. It's a gift.
Adam, I tip my cap to your serious face.
Well, so what do you think about putting that on the video board at Keenan Stadium?
Show like
the with the Hell's Bells video.
Here's Brian Simmons making a big hit. Here's like a current guy. Here's Cole Holcomb making a big stop. Here's KJ Sayles knocking somebody down. And then there's just a still shot of your face.
And then, but like, and then it goes to like Julius Peppers or Lawrence Taylor or something. Like, it doesn't have to be something special. Just like part of the video. Yeah. Like one of the guys.
Yeah.
Rude boys.
Yeah. Watch out, Clemson.
Yeah, that's right. Trevor Lawrence would be like, whoa, 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 whoa. I was not expecting this caliber of competition, sir. We have more news in the world of officials doing odd things, which we like to keep up with. This time it was in the Cincinnati game on Tuesday. They were playing South Florida, and Bearcats coach Mick Cronin was ejected. And so Mick Cronin then proceeded to say that he felt like the officials involved in the game, quote, should be suspended for their actions. Then he goes on to say, instead, let me tell you what's happening. The league office is monitoring my press conference right now to see if I say anything wrong. And that's the problem with our sport. There's no accountability, and it's never going to change because they're independent contractors. So if one guy decides he wants to be a certain way, nothing will happen. They just go about their business and do what they do. Just so happens that the officials in this game
retweet
were Mark Schnurr. Mm. Don't know him as well. Bill Covington. Mm. Definitely know him. And Lee Cassell, who also does ACC games.
Yeah.
Bill Covington and Lee Cassell are semi-regular ACC guys.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not Paul Zelk, though.
No, well, I mean, who among us is? Mick Cronin is convinced that all he said when he got his second technical was what? Now, we've been to some games that Mick Cronin has coached.
He's fiery. He's fiery.
I could foresee a situation where he may have said more than what.
Did you see, in a similar vein, Frank Haith and I can't remember who it was. Was it Hurley, maybe?
Yeah, it was Dan Hurley.
Yeah, Dan Hurley.
Yeah.
And they got technicals for shouting, it looked like, at each other and the officials all at the same time. Yes. Did you see this?
Yes, I did. This was on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And I believe there was at least one official who's done occasional ACC games involved in that one. But this is all just providing us material when we have our inevitable conversation with Brian Kersey,
oh, yeah,
where we fix everything that's wrong, yeah, with ACC basketball.
I'm not worried about it.
Of which very little is wrong.
Yeah.
But the couple things we'll bring up to him.
Yeah, we've got that covered.
We got a good email this week. Oh, also wanted to mention that we got a tweet from a listener who had been debating what they were going to do about going to the ACC tournament or going to the Eric Church shows in Greensboro. Mm. Eric Church, former pod guest.
And future pod guest.
Yeah. And they decided just to
We don't know that. I'm just assuming.
They decided just to go to the Dallas shows, and then they can go to the ACC tournament. That being said, the Eric Church tour opens today in Omaha, Nebraska. They're probably at the Drover right now.
Yeah.
If you have a chance, even if you don't know if you like Eric Church, you should go see the show because it's really good. And it'll be in Greensboro in March. Now, the email that we got was from Richard Wells. And he said a few things that I thought were relevant. He says, I just moved to the area in September after being a lifelong fan of the Heels from several states away. I got season tickets and have been enjoying being in the Dean E. Smith Center, capital underlined, for all the home games. That reminds me, sometimes we take that for granted. It's a big deal when people get to come, yeah, from far away and get to go to all the games or even go to a game. Being at the game lets me see things that I wouldn't while watching on TV, specifically watching the players during TV timeouts and breaks in the game. My vacation from life, oh, says Richard Wells, is Seventh Woods. Several times this season, including the game against Notre Dame, I've seen Seventh go up to one of the ball boys mopping the lane during a timeout and ask them for a towel, wipe his hands, say a few words, and then hand them back the towel and walk off. Things haven't gone great for him in the recent stretch prior to the chase down punch out block. However, he took a second out of a heated ACC game to talk to this young boy who will probably remember that for the rest of his life. That is awesome.
I think I've told this story about Seventh Woods before, I think. But he was when I went to Eric's Father's Day camp in the summer. Did I tell the story? Do you remember?
I don't think so.
And so there was a portion of the camp where the dads go do one thing and the kids go do another thing. And so then the dads were coming back in to the Smith Center area. And I see my son is sitting there talking one-on-one with Seventh Woods. And so I walk up and I'm like, oh, you know, let's let Seventh go. And now Seventh, thanks so much. And because I didn't know. And so Seventh, you know, said bye and walked off. And I said, what were you guys talking about? My son said, oh, donuts. We were talking about how we both like donuts. It's like, yeah, I'm sure Seventh Woods enjoyed that conversation. Very nice young guy is the point of that. And just super, very soft-spoken guy, but very nice guy. And he's had a little bit of trouble in ACC play. He certainly hoped that he can find a little more of that consistency that he had in the non-conference.
That was a good vacation from life. Richard Wells also says, a good while back, I tweeted at the pod a poorly edited picture of a shirt with Adam overlooking El Paso and asked when we would see merchandise. And Jones said it was in the works. This was in September of 2017.
Yeah. Well,
did I miss something, or how can you justify that?
No, Adam, you can back me up.
Yeah.
It is not because Adam and I don't want the merchandise and haven't inquired about the merchandise.
Yes. And have taken some steps to make it occur.
Yeah. There's just a few final steps that need to happen, and there's a lot of legalese and red tape that's slowing us down. Let's just leave it at that.
Richard's final question is one that we got tweeted at us also a couple times this week. How early should he arrive at a game if he wants to say hello and meet us guys? Hmm. The go-to time is about 30 minutes before the game at the radio position at midcourt. Look for Big Grits. That's the best time. And there we have the friendliest ushers around us at that time. So a lot of times they can help.
Yes.
If Jones or Eric are wearing the big headphones that go over their ears, that means they're on the air.
Yeah.
But somewhere around like 30 to 40 minutes before the game, because it's always fun to meet people that want to take a picture or say hello or do whatever. That's always fun.
Adam, we also received a tweet about the halftime show of the Notre Dame game.
The Superstars.
Asking our opinion on the Superstars. This is kind of my opinion on the Superstars. There was a point in time, Adam, where the Superstars were cutting edge.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was excited that the Superstars were there.
Yep.
and they had hilarious names that were like almost like famous names, but they weren't famous names. Like
yep.
Mackerel Jordan, and he was a big giant fish wearing a Michael Jordan uniform, right? Like hilarious, right? That is pretty funny to want to think about. Mackerel Jordan. Good job, superstars. But the point is, I think the superstars have run their course. Like, everybody knows that you're going to eat the fake referee and spit his clothes out. And if you have enough time, you're going to spit him out. And he's going to only be wearing, like, athletic shorts or something. And it's like, ah, ha, 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 ha. Like, the superstars need to have a new deal, or they need to take a break and re-energize themselves and come back. Now, here's a little behind-the-scenes note for you, Adam. So at halftime, I normally go to the back. So I exit, then I come back. So I exit through the home tunnel, come back through the visitor's tunnel. Make a little loop.
Big loop.
Yeah. So as I was coming back this past game, the superstars had just come off the court.
Wow.
So, I could have touched Mackerel Jordan, no big deal.
A brush with greatness.
But so they were in the hallway, and then I go, like, I'm crossing the space where they had been, like, maybe 45 seconds later, because they went in to go do whatever the superstars do in their private areas. And so, I'm going to tell you something about the superstars, Adam. Something very important. They stink. It smelled so bad where they had been. And I was like, so I started, you know how when something smells bad and you kind of start and you're like, oh gosh, whoa, what's that? And then all of a sudden, like, you're in it and yeah. you're just like in a tornado of stink. That's what I was in. And I was like, whoa, what in the world has happened back here? And then I was like, oh, it had to be the superstars. They've got these stinky inflatable things that they wear. I can't imagine they're easy to wash. They're on the road all the time. Adam, it was unpleasant.
We've said before that the most important part of a coaching search is fit.
Yeah.
I now believe the same is true for halftime acts. Mm. The superstars are not a weeknight 9 p.m. show.
No.
You need kids.
Yeah, it needs to be a Saturday nooner.
You need kids who like it when the guy fakes throwing the ball and Mackerel Jordan goes to chase it, but then he realizes that the guy didn't really throw it, and he turns around and he pops him right on the head.
Yeah.
You need kids who think that's funny.
Yeah.
At 10:10 p.m. on a Tuesday, I just want the teams to come back out so they'll play more basketball.
Right.
It's 10:10 p.m.
Yeah.
In any other situation, I would be comatose at that time of night. The superstars aren't going to make me think it's funny. So that, I think maybe they were in the wrong place at the wrong time, Jones. And when we inevitably see them later this season,
yeah.
which I guarantee you that we will.
Yeah, we'll smell them coming.
maybe they'll be a better fit. We're getting ready to head down to Florida, which means there's a chance we might see Simon Says guy.
I hadn't seen him in a while.
He might have been taking a sabbatical.
Yeah, refreshing himself.
Yeah.
Like the superstars need to.
He doesn't smell bad.
Quick reminder that we are brought to you by UNC Healthcare and MyUNC Chart. Keep track of your stats at MyUNC Chart. You can visit myuncchart.org to sign up. And, of course, our friends at Pinehurst. Gil Hance, redesign of Pinehurst No. 4, opened in September to rave reviews. Forbes magazine calls it the newest must-play in the country. Be among the first to play. Visit Pinehurst.com. So, Adam, Carolina going down to face Miami next. That is a
noon
game. We're on the air at 11 o'clock on Saturday. Hurricanes just 9-7, but they have five guys who are averaging double figures. They don't play many. They really only play six or seven guys. Five of them are averaging in double figures, though. Chris Likes is a really good guard. Yeah, I was kind of starting to take some notes down in getting ready for Miami, and I was thinking about Chris Likes and had watched some and was reading about. And so I was writing down just things I thought he did well. And it was like, handle ball, penetrate, shoot, defend, free throws. I mean, it was just like everything. He's only 5'7", but that doesn't matter. I mean, he's just a really, really good college guard. And somebody that really makes Miami go. And it's going to be a tough guard for anybody.
never forget about Miami as long as Jim Laranjeiga is there.
Yeah.
They know how to play against Carolina. It doesn't matter who is on their team. It doesn't matter what time the game starts. It doesn't matter who's on Carolina's team. Something about Jim Laranjeiga, he knows how to beat Carolina. So I don't care if they're 9-7 or 999-7, it's a dangerous game.
They have had an interesting year personnel-wise in that, you know, one of the guys who they thought was going to be probably their number one option, Dwayne, used to be Huell, but he has now started taking his mom's last name, which is Hernandez, so he goes by Dwayne Hernandez now, has not played at all. And that is because he has been caught up in some of the NCAA stuff that has trickled out. Of course, we assume there's more to come, but really, Adam, who knows at this point? So he has not played yet, period, this season. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, they just lost another appeal to try to get him out there, and it's not happening anytime soon, it appears. But that's been a big blow for them. I mean, he's a junior guy, or he's a junior, a veteran guy, 6'10", 6'11", he can shoot. So when you lose a good player like that, that has hurt them. I think that is part of the reason why their record isn't as good. But they also are coming off their first ACC win. They had already played four games. They have not played at all in the midweek. So they did not play this past week at all. Their last game was last Saturday against Wake Forest, which they won for their first conference victory. So they've had some time off after that win, so they're probably feeling good. They've had some time to get ready for Carolina. As Adam mentioned, traditionally when Coach Laranjeiga has been there, they have been very good against the Tar Heels. So it is going to be a challenge. As much as we like the noon games on the road, I know for a fact the players don't enjoy them. They just don't like being up and try to be ready to play that quickly during the day, because the Tar Heels do start their day, I think it's like 7 in the morning or something, to get all the kind of formulaic things that they do before a game to get those taken care of. They have to get up pretty early for a noon game. So it's just, there's the potential for a sleepy start, just all those things. So we'll see.
Jones mentioned the lack of depth, and that's hurt Miami in some games they've lost.
Yeah, I mean, they were up 10 against State with 8 or 10 minutes left, and I thought, just from watching it, ran out of gas a little bit.
And so if there is that sleepy start, just keep in mind, if the Tar Heels can stay, you know, as long as they can see Miami with 10 minutes left, you would think perhaps the Tar Heel depth might play a factor in those last 10 minutes of the game.
All right, Adam. Anything else? How can you justify that? Anything before we get out of here?
All right, I've got a quick how can you justify that, and then we'll we'll decide if we want to leave it in or not.
Nice.
I do not have to justify!
How can you justify what you've done? How
can you justify sacrificing our love?
How can you possibly justify that?
This how can you justify that is something that I somehow never knew until about 2 days ago.
DaBaby.
No. I don't understand how this is possible.
Okay.
Do you know the difference between an optometrist and an ophthalmologist?
I know there is a difference. One of them is more on the medical side of things, right?
Ophthalmologist.
Yeah.
An optometrist does not necessarily have to have gone to medical school. How is it possible that in the world of the medical field, we thought it was a good idea to give these two people such similar names that would how would you ever know that? An optometrist sounds like a doctor to me.
But they do more glasses and things like that, right?
Yeah. Well, and they have had medical training,
right,
but don't necessarily have to have been to medical school. Couldn't we have called them something different? Like the suggestion I had was eyeballologist. That's different enough than ophthalmologist that I can understand it. What about glassesologist?
Yeah, doesn't have a great ring to it. I don't disagree,
no,
though.
It doesn't have a great ring. I agree.
I also cannot spell ophthalmologist. You could tell me how to spell it, and then 5 seconds later go, Jones, spell ophthalmologist, and I would spell it wrong.
There's that extra L
there. There's like an A in there and an L. It's weird.
Yeah. I just think we need better names for these.
We need an expert. We need an eye expert to email us and give us an update on why this happened.
Well, there's a cardiologist that takes care of your heart, right?
There's head, shoulders, knees, and toes.
There's not a separate thing like a cardiologist.
Right.
Who
sells EKG equipment.
Right. No one would think that was a good idea. Like, hey, you're having a little heart pain. Did you go to the cardiologist? No, but I went to the cardiologist. It's probably going to be fine. He thought it'd be good. It shouldn't be so similar. Mm. Just a little something that's been troubling me.
Okay. Adam, I'm really excited about the next couple of weeks here on the pod. Now, none of this has actually happened yet, but we are working in a lot of different directions to bring some really cool interviews here over the next couple of weeks. We're not sure if they're actually going to happen or not, but we're working to try to make them happen.
These next 2 weeks have an incredibly, if they were a player, they'd have an incredibly high ceiling.
Yeah, you'd think about drafting in first round because you can see what the potential is, but
they've got an incredibly low floor.
Yeah, it could be a bust. It could be a bust, too. You could have just used your number 6 overall pick and get nothing out of it.
Yeah. I hope we reach the ceiling, but if we shoot for the moon, we might land amongst the stars, Jones.
Yeah, that's true. So if things come together as we hope they will, we're going to have some really great interviews coming up over the next couple of weeks. If not, it's all
Adam. You don't have to listen. It's free.
It's all Adam's fault, if not. All right. But for now, we're gonna get out of here. A reminder again that Miami game is noon. We'll be on the air at 11 a.m. for that one on Saturday. And then the quick turnaround to Monday night, which brings up this point that our next pod. Oh, yeah. Is a pod after dark.
You know that you never know what might happen in a pod after dark.
Everything's on the table.
Especially after we've been hanging out with Buzz Williams.
Anything could
happen. Coaches walking on the floor. Superstars bopping people on the head. Who knows?
Anything could happen. But for now, we're going to let Rick Steinbacher and the RZA get us out here on the Carolina Insider.
This is Rick Steinbacher signing off from a guy who was at Carolina in 93 to another guy who had an awesome year in 1993. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.